Wasn't an intent.
I know, because I looked at that all.
Welcome back. The Senate Committee on Higher Education is now in order. We have one addition to the agenda for testifiers, and we're going to move this individual to the top. So, Mr. Jace Crow, a student from the University of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, Mr. Chair. Thank you. For the record, my name is Jace Kroll. I'm a student at the University of Minnesota. I'd just like to say how thankful I am to watch this process. I'm an undergrad political science student, and it only gives me hope in the whole government institution that I'm able to watch these committee meetings. I have benefited from AP programs, from Central Lakes College, from Mankato State University, and from the University of Minnesota. So I've had a fair sampling of all that Minnesota has to offer as far as higher education goes. I represent the students right now of the University of Minnesota. We are students that have a vested interest in the institution and vested interest in the whole state. The reason why is because the University of Minnesota is a local great institution that we all have pride in, we all favor, and think that it's a fantastic institution. But the trends and cuts to higher education have undermined the strength of the University of Minnesota. As a student, I know how important it is to have a college degree. I currently work at Target as well to help pay for my rent just to live in the cities to work or to go to University of Minnesota. And I know that with a college degree, I'm not going to be working retail for the rest of my life, as many of my friends back in my hometown are doing because they don't have a college degree. I and our students are against these cuts because we know that the cuts are against the moral political culture of the universe or of the state of Minnesota. We know the importance of having a college education and to inhibit the availability for our siblings and for our friends who have not yet come to college or are at the age of going to college. We find that wrong. The cuts are harmful to our students, to our siblings, and to our families that chose to move to the state of Minnesota because of our higher education system and our education system as a whole. One specific part of this budget that I and my fellow students particularly dislike is the tuition cap for the University of Minnesota. One thing that does trouble us often is the hidden fees found in the University of Minnesota. It takes a lot of effort to find where they come from, and one fear of ours is that the fees will increase without our knowledge if there is a strong tuition cap. I'm basically here to echo everyone else who has spoken today. We are not in favor of these cuts. And the last thing that I'd like to say is that in America, there's a growing dividend between the haves and the have-nots. We're at levels of pre-World War II, between the haves having a whole bunch and the haves-not having a very small amount. And the best way to decrease that dividend is education. And this is a point where we can choose to spread education and spread wealth to everyone. And I think that this bill would be contrary to that. Thank you. I stand for any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Crow. Any questions? Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Crow, where is your hometown? I was just curious.
I'm from Brainerd, Minnesota. But since then, my whole family kind of took the shotgun approach to southern Minnesota, and I have family in Mankato, Rochester, and we did live in Waseca for a little bit, too.
And Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Crow. So you're a Target team member. My son is working at Target while he goes to college, too, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's the way to
Mr.
live.
Crow.
You have a Mr. Chair, Mr. Crow, you have a large number of red shirts, I'm assuming, that you have in your...
Yeah, lots of... Senator Fishback. Lots of red shirts with holes right here for my name tag tearing too many times.
Yeah. Or Mr. Chair, Mr. Crow, when you wash them with them on there.
Yep.
But thank you very much for being here. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crow. Next on the agenda, Rick Nelson, Director of Government Relations, MSCF. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Rick Nelson from MSCF, or also Minnesota State College faculty, representing about 5,000 faculty members from across the state of Minnesota, from International Falls, Worthington, Moorhead, Winona. I could probably name everything but Jordan and Prior Lake of members in the room. And I appreciate the break and the student being able to speak before me, because following the legendary Monty Butte and his history lesson would not have been an easy task. So thanks for taking the break and coming back. When our organization looks at the cuts that are before us, we take a look at it maybe a little bit from a perspective of what does the future hold? How do we meet the needs of business and industry in our programs, from the small colleges in rural Minnesota to the small community and technical colleges in the rural area, as well as the metropolitan area? And we believe that the cuts will dramatically reduce the ability of our colleges, the two-year institution, to respond to the needs of the job market, to employers, in the communities we serve, because we are the people who educate those who will be the workers of jobs, jobs, jobs. We look at this bill in its current form as cutting corners on equipment, technology, and the intellectual capital of our product. We believe any fat that is perceived to exist in our system or our colleges was eliminated a few cuts ago. We're to the point where we think and feel these cuts will impact the quality, but most importantly, our ability to meet the needs of the future of Minnesota employers. This impact is probably going to have a greater impact on our rural campuses. We believe that this cut has the possibility of creating a brain drain in our state. We're hearing from some of our institutions near the borders of other states that some of our best and brightest students who they're recruiting are likely to leave the state because they can receive a cheaper or more economical education in another state. We've heard previous testimony in other hearings that evidence shows once they leave, they're not very likely to return. We also have a concern at the two-year colleges, as we're asked to meet the needs of our local businesses, to meet their needs for employees, to train them. A couple of weeks ago, you heard an example of program development that we had developed at Alexandria Technical and Community College, mechatronics. We're not certain that our faculty will be in a position to create such programs in the future with the cuts of this magnitude. We need to take a look at what the future holds. But most importantly, we believe these cuts will impact the students. Myself, I was a first-generation college student in my family. My dad had an eighth-grade education, went to work in construction in the railroad, and then later became a banker. My mom graduated from high school and worked odd jobs. Despite their limited education and financial means, they understood the way for the future of their children was through higher education. Because it was close to home, and through state appropriations and commitments by the taxpayers, I was able to attend Northland Community and Technical College in Thief River and get my undergrad or AA degree, and then go on, Senator Carlson, to the great Bemidji State University and receive both my undergrad and my master's degree. I worked a couple of jobs, and my parents sacrificed greatly. When I graduated, I had $1,000 in debt. Today, a student who's in the same position I was 35 years ago is faced with a mountain of debt, or yet, choosing not to attend college. We need to take a look at what we're doing in the future of Minnesota. And as I look forward and our organization looks forward, we hope that we won't have the caps on tuition and that we can find additional revenue to help the future students, but also to help our faculty help the business leaders and employers train the people they need to get Minnesota back on the track it needs to get on. We hope, as we go forward, you'll consider some of the thoughts that have been shared with you today by all the presenters and take a look at what impact this bill will have on our public higher education system, not only today, but as others have stated, 10 years from now. Again, thank you, Chair Miller and members, for allowing us the opportunity to share our thoughts with you, and if there's any questions, we'd attempt to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Any questions for Mr. Nelson? I see none. Thank you very much for your testimony. Next on our agenda is Mr. Andrew Spaeth, Minnesota State University Student Association. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Andrew Spaeth. I'm a student at Bemidji State University. I also serve as the chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. The association represents over 75,000 students attending the seven state universities in Minnesota. I just want to start by recognizing and thanking the committee for your leadership and your recognition of the importance of the state grant program. The state grant program has served literally thousands of Minnesotans who would otherwise not have had an opportunity to pursue a higher education. State universities are an important asset to Minnesota and to your constituents. Literally thousands of people, young and old, attend a Minscu institution each year. Your constituents and our state, now more than ever, rely on the Minscu schools to retrain and retool our workforce for the 21st century. The system is producing nearly 35,000 graduates each year, helping Minnesota remain competitive. The omnibus bill before you will reduce the quality of education we deliver at the public higher education institutions in Minnesota, and it will hinder our ability to remain competitive not only with other Midwestern states, not only with the other states in the union, but in the global economy. As each of you are, I am concerned about the future. Is this really the best that we can do for tomorrow's generation? Minnesota has been known for offering high-quality education, but this bill is putting our ability to be competitive at risk. The proposed cuts will degrade quality, limit access, and weaken our ability to move out of the economic recession. In the last decade, Minnesota students and our public colleges and universities have seen decreasing state appropriations and increasing tuition rates. The so-called low-hanging fruit is gone. Our campuses are left with the essential services that they need to deliver higher education in Minnesota. State universities, These reductions have meant larger class sizes, reductions in course offerings, faculty and staff reductions, work-study cuts, elimination of graduate assistantships, and reductions in vital student services. All of our state universities are planning for the next round of legislative cuts. As many of you may have heard, at St. Cloud State University, they've planned to eliminate the homecoming ceremonies for next year. At Bemidji State, cuts will eliminate 50% of all graduate assistantships that are left, eliminate the men's track and field program, and reduce course offerings across 21 different academic areas. As Dr. Wright mentioned in her testimony earlier, Minnesota needs 70% of our citizens with a post-secondary education by the year 2018. I'm not a math major. I'm not really good at math. But that's only 7 years away. How do we plan to meet our goals, to remain economically competitive, to have a better future, when we're cutting the very programs that will help us succeed? Minnesota families and your constituents rely on the Minsky institutions. Senator Carlson, over 7,500 of your constituents attended a Minsky institution in fiscal year 2009. Over 2,200 of them were at Bemidji State University. Vice Chair Miller, 5,900 of your constituents attended a Minsky institution in fiscal year 2009. Nearly 1,600 of them were at Winona State University. Senator Sharon, 10,710 of your constituents attended a Minsky institution in fiscal year 2009. Over 4,700 of them were at Minnesota State University in Mankato. And Senator Peterson, 9,761 of your constituents attended a Minsky institution in fiscal year 2009. Over 5,000 of them were at St. Cloud State University. Your constituents rely on Minsky institutions. Our system is one of the most efficient in delivering higher education in the state and in the country. Bemidji State University and Northwest Technical College have a unique relationship. They share a president and they share administrative positions, and they're planning to merge more administrative positions in this next round of cuts. Our institutions have been forced to become innovative and creative more than ever before, because the state appropriation continues to make up less of our budget each biennium. Tuition has not increased because the cost of delivering education is rising. Tuition has gone up because the state of Minnesota has not made it a priority to fund higher education. It is a sad state of affairs that the norm is that young people must take on large loads of debt in the hopes of a better future. That is a huge risk. Today, unemployment rates for new college graduates are higher than they have ever been. This bill has the potential to close doors to our next generation of leaders. The state of Minnesota invested in nearly everyone in this room and many of the leaders that are at this table today. Why doesn't my generation deserve the same? In closing, Minnesotans value education. These cuts are not just numbers on a spreadsheet. These are your constituents. These are Minnesota families, and this is the next generation of Minnesota leaders. Thank you.
Mr. Spaeth, thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions for the testifier? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to remind Mr. Spaeth that the cut to the men's track and field program will actually cost this university, Bemidji State University, money because of the loss of revenue of the enrollees in the university, and that was due to a Title IX situation and not a budget cut. So that'll actually cost the university, not save the university. I just wanted to make sure that that was pointed out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Senator Carlson.
Any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you again, Mr. Spaeth. Next on the agenda, looks like we have Jeff Ditburner.
Yeah.
Minnesota State College Student Association. Mr. Ditburner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Ditburner. I'm the Vice President of the Minnesota State College Student Association. We represent the students of MinSCU's two-year community and technical colleges. I want to thank you for the opportunity to address the committee regarding your proposed solution to the state budget. Students are very concerned about the consequences of the deep cuts this proposal makes to public higher education and the implications that this budget proposal will have both on the lives of individual students and Minnesota's long-term economic competitiveness. All of you sitting at the table today have achieved great things in your life, and that's evidenced by your positions. And that's in no small part due to your own hard work and determination. But as true for you and many people in this room, a quality education was an important first step on your path to success. If this state is truly committed to restoring Minnesota's status as one of the best places in the country to live, to work, and to run a business, then higher education is perhaps the best investment that it can make. Educated people get better jobs, lead more independent lives, and are able to contribute revenue to the state with tax dollars instead of drawing revenue from the state through the use of service programs. But we must make that initial investment to ensure that our schools are affordable, of high quality, and able to serve all students who wish to access higher education. With that said, we recognize the reality of the budget situation that the state is facing means that cuts need to be made. We appreciate and support the committee's demonstrated commitment to preserving access to affordable higher education by including a tuition cap in the budget. As you have heard throughout the session, Minnesota's community technical colleges students strongly support a tuition cap. Tuition and fees at our two-year colleges have nearly doubled over the past 10 years, causing our schools to be the third most expensive on average in the nation and far and away the most expensive in the Midwest. When comparing funding for MinSCU over the past decade, not much has changed. In 2001, the legislative appropriation was actually about $30 million more than the proposal in front of you. If MinSCU were any other state agency, their structure, delivery model would look a lot different than it did in 2001. It would have to in order to exist. But MinSCU is a unique entity with a unique funding source. MinSCU has relied heavily on tuition and fee revenue and has maintained a similar operating structure continues to increase per student spending nearly every year. A tuition cap would help ensure that in this time of economic crisis, a higher education remains affordable and accessible to all Minnesotans who are willing to work to make their life better for themselves and their families. Further, it'll protect students who are currently enrolled in college and prevent them from having to alter their educational goals or drop out of college if their tuition rises too high in the middle of their program. Students have said all along that we're looking for a fair and equitable solution to the budget deficit. Students want to be a part of the budget solution, but time and time again, we've been asked to shoulder a disproportionately large portion of the cuts to the MinSCU system in the form of increased tuition rates. This model is unsustainable, and if we continue down this path, we will be doing a great disservice to the current and future students who rely heavily on public higher education to get the skills they need to get good jobs and lead more independent lives. The committee's budget proposes a $126 million cut from the current levels to the MinSCU system over the upcoming biennium. The tuition cap in the bill, 3% at the colleges and 4% at the universities, would raise approximately $82.3 million in new revenue for the MinSCU system, which equates to approximately 65% of the cuts to the MinSCU system. By contrast, the $120 million generated by a 5% cap, as suggested by MinSCU, would equate to 96% of the cuts being put on the students' backs. And it wasn't an easy decision for students to come to the legislature and ask for a tuition cap. We strongly feel that the Board of Trustees are the ideal and appropriate group to set tuition. But it seems like a tuition cap is needed guidance for the board, given their decisions of the past. In our view, one of two things needs to occur in the near future. The legislature needs to invest more funding in higher education, or the legislature needs to engage in a conversation with the Board of Trustees and decide how to transform the system in order to obtain a more sustainable model. We feel a tuition cap is the short-term answer, but the long-term answer is not easy, painless, or fast. As students, we will be at the table, and everything should be on the table. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dittberner. Any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if you believe that students can't get educated without any taxpayer help.
Mr. Dittmer.
Well, there are certainly many ways to structure higher education. We're not here to decide how it should be delivered and how the systems should be operating. What we're here to say is whatever the result is, it should be fair and equitable and affordable for students.
Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
The reason I ask that is because I know a number of students who do get educated without going to a taxpayer-subsidized school. They go to private schools. I have a couple of children. One went to a Catholic school in Winona, and one went to a state school in South Dakota. But I know that you know there is opportunity, and I know that it's not the path for everyone, and I readily accept that. But I do believe that students can get educated without the taxpayers' assistance in some cases. And I just wanted to remind people of that it does happen, and you don't have to be from a real wealthy family either. I know I had 1 year of public education, and my family was not wealthy at all. You know, my daughter had 6 years of public education when you count her whole educational experience, and we did get some subsidized loans, but I guess that I know that it isn't the end. I just wanted to make sure that people understood that some people do manage to do that, and I know it's not for everyone, but I don't want all this gloom and doom and this idea that people can't make it on their own.
Senator Saxo.
Thank you, Senator Miller, and I guess Senator Roebling, what I would say is that it was easier to get an education 20 years ago than it is right now, and I don't know if there was any less 20 than there was, but I mean, you saw this little graph that we had here before. It costs more to get an education than we see the increase in the minimum wage. So nobody's saying that you can't get a public education by working for it. It's just that it costs so much more than it used to. And I think that's fair to say, too.
It is fair.
Any other questions for our testifier? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Dittberner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I want to thank all three of our students for coming to testify. It's very important to get the feedback from the students. So thank you to all three of you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would wish to testify? Okay. Seeing none, I think we will go to a committee discussion then on the Senate File 924, the omnibus bill. And just for the record, we do have a quorum present, so I wanted to state that for the record. Discussion? Seeing none, I'm just
kidding. We only have
one, two, three, four, five.
Well, and five, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I understand that there there are other committees.
Yes, we do have two or three other committees. So.
Mr. Chair, if there's no other discussion, I will offer the A2 amendment.
6-4.
Okay.
I don't know if it's handed out or not. Well, and Mr. Chair, I do think Senator it's Fishback. Only fair that we do, because there are other committees. We've talked to folks about we would wait and we'd gather people, so we're not going to just rush through and not let people vote. We'll make people aware.
We could certainly.
We got lots of cell phone numbers and extra pages, so we won't rush through things.
Senator Fishback, does everyone have the?
I don't know if it's the A2's in the packet. It is in the packet. Okay.
Senator Fishback.
And Mr. Chair, the A2 amendment, we did hear the ban on human cloning the other day, but this is simply a ban on, it's an extension of the state or the ban on the use of state funds. So this is right now, this does exist in state law. It was put in 2009, and this would extend it.
Okay. Any discussion? Senator Lance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Fishback, this looks like a little different and much more broad provision than is currently in state law. Could you explain how it's different?
Senator Fishback.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lance, I don't have the language in front of me. If the current language in front of me, if you've taken a look at it, if you have it, I guess I don't have it in front of me, the current language.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Letts.
The current law that uses this language was in the 2009 budget bill, referring only to the appropriation in that budget bill to the University of Minnesota. The amendment before us is far broader than that. It actually enacts a statute. It applies to all state funds or federal funds the state receives for state programs. Frankly, I think it's way beyond the ambit of the Higher Education Committee imposing those kind of restrictions. Whatever you think about the merits of the proposal, the language defining cloning is currently within this biennium's budget applying to the U. But this is much broader. So I move that the amendment is out of order. It's not germane to this bill.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator
advice,
Fishback.
There are no germaneness tests in committee. So, Mr. Chair, I think that there is application to university funds. I think that maybe this isn't specific, but obviously there is some application to university funds too that is in our bill. And I again repeat, there's no germaneness test in committee.
Thank you, and I was aware of that, so thank you. And Senator Letts?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I ask if Senator Fishback intends to take this bill to the Health and Human Services Committee as jurisdictional for Chapter 145, which this amendment purports to.
Senator Fishback.
Mr. Chair, the not right now, but I will check with Senator Hamm. Chair of the Health and Human Services Committee.
Senator Letts.
Mr. Chairman, I think whatever motion ends up being made, to refer now, I guess, the entire omnibus bill since to
Health and Human Services, because I mean, there's no doubt Chapter 145 is under their jurisdiction, not this committee's jurisdiction, and the application is extraordinarily broad, would include this, and frankly, it would probably also affect the Mayo Clinic, and I'd be curious to see, to get input from representatives of the Mayo Clinic that I understand does a fair amount of stem cell research. Whether this would have any impact on their research, on their clinical practice, on the treatment they provide, or any research that they would intend or hope.
Senator Latz, will you please turn your microphone? I can't hear you. Thank you.
Any research that they would intend or hope to do, because this could have a significant impact on them as well. Does the committee intend to hear from Mayo Clinic or the University of Minnesota with regard or any other parties that would have input in this particular provision? Was there any notice given that this amendment was going to be offered today, even though we had the discussion on the general topic at a previous higher education hearing, or is this just kind of sprung on us in our members' packets?
Senator Fishback.
Mr. Chair, we did have the discussion or the a broader discussion on the ban the other day. I think that this actually is tapered back from that. If you would not agree, this is a state funding ban, state and federal. You know, in many cases, Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, we do amendments, and so I didn't. Is there some requirement that we provide notice?
Mr. Chair, if that's a question, I'll suggest fairness. If there isn't a formal requirement in the rule, I mean, I think the committee has an obligation to give notice if a substantial new policy, which this certainly is intended to be offered as an amendment to the budget bill rather than separately tracking. I mean, there are lots of interested parties that might have wanted to be here to testify, to offer their opinions, members of the public, people that have benefited from, who may be alive because of the kind of research that is proposed to be affected by this amendment, I can imagine, and also the impact beyond just the university's research that was the subject of the last hearing, since this is a far broader amendment than just affecting the University of Minnesota. I think it would be, frankly, deceptive to offer this without public notice and give opportunity for public input on this new and far broader permanent amendment to state statute.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, it says that it's no state or federal funds that the state receives, I'm assuming the state means the state of Minnesota, for state programs. So it doesn't involve programs, as you might suggest, that we would have to bring in a lot of people for this. It's only money the state receives for state programs. And I think that is quite limiting. And when you think about it, how many other programs in Minnesota are working with human cloning, state programs are working with human cloning. I can't think of more than one or two. And mainly it's at the University of Minnesota. It would even have the potential to do that. The Mayo Clinic is basically a private enterprise.
Well, Senator Latz, to that point.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, the Mayo Clinic also receives state funding. It's in the budget bill that's in front of us today. And to the extent that that funding money is fungible, it subvents their overall budget. I would suspect that if they were to engage in the conduct which is considered by this amendment, there would be organizations very quickly suing Mayo to hold them to the standards in this bill. And honestly, I don't know what other, you know, state grants or state funding mechanisms might go along the way here. I mean, this covers not just human cloning, but expenses incidental to it. And I would also suggest that the definition of cloning here is extraordinarily broad. It's not what the average person thinks of as human cloning when you ask them in Minnesota, what is human cloning? This isn't what they think of. This is a very different definition that, frankly, it's more research-oriented than it is anything else, and I would suggest probably motivated more by moral and, dare I say, religious opinion or beliefs than it is any scientific definitions or even the general public's definition of cloning. So what's a state program? What does human cloning mean? I think these are issues that could have very broad implications, and to do this without any public notice, without any public input today in an omnibus higher education budget bill is a distortion of our legislative process.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
We are here to deal with state programs.
Not all of them. I'm sorry.
I contend that this is similar to what we had in language before. It was more specific maybe to the U of M. But I do believe that if the Mayo Clinic is doing this kind of work, they should, we're just saying, don't do it with our dollars.
Let's see, I had Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am concerned about this is broader than we've had in the past. We've said no state funds, but I don't believe we've limited federal funds. And a lot of the research, of course, is federal funded. I think that it would be helpful if we could develop a consensus that we all agree that we're against reproductive cloning. This is a little too broad to just say human cloning. And when you're talking about any stage of development, then that also would include, I assume, the five-day-old blastocyst. And that, you know, with the five-day-old blastocyst in a petri dish, it eventually, if it stays in the petri dish, it dies. If it's implanted, it can take implantation or not, and then it's flushed through the system. It can be frozen, and there are a lot of them that are frozen. It can be offered as a donor to another infertile family, which is not very often, I'm told. It can be given to research, which is what we're talking about, the potential here. And then the fifth use, they just burn them like tissue. So that's what we're talking about basically here. So if it's given to research, a group of cells called a blastocyst or something like that, then there is a whole lot of therapeutic application here. And I'm really surprised. This room should be filled with people who care about curing diseases. And we're talking about diseases like Parkinson's, like diabetes. We have an epidemic of diabetes. And very, very tragic diseases like Alzheimer's. And my mother has Alzheimer's. And it's a disease where your loved one slips away from you over a 10-year period, day by day. They change. They leave you. They're no longer the same person. And you know, my mother's already 84. There's probably not going to be a cure for Alzheimer's. But there's a potential that for our generation, well, my generation, I'm older than some of you, that there could be a cure for Alzheimer's. And there could be a cure for Parkinson's. But we can't send the message out that we're anti-research in the state of Minnesota. And by passing these kind of laws, we heard Dr. Walters the other day say he's already been approached by Stanford. We want to be the bioscience center of the Midwest. We spent millions of dollars building five bioscience buildings on the University of Minnesota campus. And all that effort can be just washed away by passing legislation that doesn't have enough thoughtfulness. If we could agree that we all want to ban reproductive cloning, I think that's a consensus that we all have. But why do we want to ban therapeutic cloning? Maybe cloning isn't even the right word. Just the therapeutic use of cells. You know? And if they're your cells, they might be used someday to regenerate your liver. And you won't reject it because it's your own cells. It's for your own. Some people are already talking about freezing their cells in case they need them in the future to continue their own lives.
but they can also be a benefit to other people. And I do think that if the public knew that we were having this debate and hearing and talking about this issue, I mean, this room would be filled with all those organizations that care about research, and they raise money and have their walks and their, you know, their runs to raise money for research, and all that can go down the drain by one amendment. Let's not do this. Let's come up with a clear definition of reproductive cloning. We can ask the university to help us with that, and not have the kind of unintended consequences that I'm fearful we're going to have with this.
I had Senator Lori, did you want to?
Well, I was just going to say that when we were first going over this, it was described as an extension of existing state law, and I was questioning right away, why is it a brand new paragraph all underlined? I mean, if we were, you know, this is my first time on higher ed, but why wouldn't it just be an extension? I mean, maybe that would be another route for the author of this amendment to go that might not get such significant pushback. I mean, this does seem much broader, and I would talk to our chair of Health and Human Services that you and I both sit on as well, and strongly encourage him to bring it over to our committee and give it a thorough hearing if this were to pass and be attached to this bill tonight. I think it's a very significant change to state law.
I had Senator Sharon next.
Much of what I would say has been said, excepting that I think that we are really in danger of confusing the public about the difference between human cloning for the, you know, using stem cells for the creation of another human being, and stem cells used for therapeutic purposes. Very different, very separate, and this rolls them all in together and confuses the public into thinking that what all this is about is human cloning when it is not.
Senator Brown.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, I'm not sure I'm clear on one thing you said. You said that this would prohibit the use of cells, or, and what I'm reading, it prohibits the use of embryos. Is
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, you could call, they call it embryos, absolutely. It also can be called a blastocyst. It's 5 days old. It's been, you've combined an egg and the nucleus of somatic cell, but they call it, it's a combination of cells, and then it's a blastocyst, and I don't know at what point the definition, I'm not a scientist, it's called an embryo. But I told you what happens to those five-day-old fertilized cells, that they're discarded, more or less. They're discarded if they're not implanted into the infertile couple, the infertile woman. They die in the petri dish, or they're burned, or if the couple wishes, they can donate them to research. So we're talking about the potential of really helping people, curing disease or destruction.
Well, I wasn't,
Senator Brown.
Senator Pappas, I just wasn't clear when you were explaining, you mentioned cells, but this specifically mentions embryos. So I just wanted to make sure you weren't.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, at any stage of development, it's not clear.
What's not clear?
And what is an enucleated egg? Is that a fertilized egg? That's been fertilized with sperm? I'm not sure. You know, you have to explain. Maybe Senator Fischbach can kind of explain the biology here of what's going on.
Senator Letts?
And Mr.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I will have to look that up. I don't. That's beyond my scientific ability.
Well, that's, Mr. Chairman, that is our problem here today, is none of us are scientists, unless there's anyone at this table who is. I would love to have a scientist join us at the table. Maybe she is.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jordan Marie Bauer, and I'm here on behalf of Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life. I am unfortunately not a scientist. However, I can explain to you exactly what the language means. Aside from a few of the words at the very beginning of the sentence, all of the language is the exact same as to what was signed into session law in 2009. So this isn't anything that we currently haven't seen before us in one way, shape, or form. And this was before the Higher Education Conference Committee in 2009 as well. So this does not prohibit any sort of research. This does not prohibit even attempting to clone humans. This just says we won't be using any state dollars the state has, whether that's state money or funds from the federal government to be used for state programs for that research. There have been... some conversations about what does some of this terminology mean. And a nucleated egg means a human egg whose 23 chromosomes or nucleus has been removed, at which point they would take a skin cell, for example, from, Senator Brown, and take the nucleus out of the skin cell, which contains the 46 chromosomes, and put that into the human egg, which had its nucleus removed. Therefore, the egg is in possession of the 46 chromosomes needed to begin its development. And as Senator Pappas had said, about 5 days or within a time frame thereafter, at the normal stage of development for any human being, we were all at that stage, is then the point where they decide whether or not they're going to destroy that embryo for research or whether or not they would implant it in a womb and let that embryo develop further, as we all do, into a baby. So I just wanted to make that clear as to exactly what some of these things are that we're talking about.
Thank you, Ms. Bauer. Senator Lyons.
Mr. Chairman, two things, maybe a few things. First of all, a couple of words at the beginning of the paragraph can be a dramatic change in state policy. A couple of words here is far broader than what's currently in Chapter 145.422. In fact, the whole paragraph here is broader than that, although it's purporting to add a section directly after that in state law. And it's far broader than what's currently in session law for the last budget. Frankly, if any fertility clinics received any state funding, this would ban them from being fertility clinics in some ways. I suspect, I don't know if we had a scientist here, if there had been proper notice at this hearing that this was going to be a topic, some of these questions could be answered more directly. But at any stage of development, I think Senator Pappas is absolutely right. When you create an embryo, it's one cell, and a woman's egg is one cell. And when you put in the nucleus from a skin cell, you have a one-celled organism. So it's even this would apply even before Senator Pappas suggesting it gets to the stage of a blastocyst, which is 8 cells or 30 cells or something. I think it's 8 cells is the blastocyst. Just that one cell at the very first step would be the ban that this would apply to. And by the time it gets to the stage of 30 cells, for the research that we've been dealing with, they draw out the stem cells, which has the effect of destroying the surrounding organism, if that's what one would call it, and that's what we're dealing with here. So, frankly, the fact that it's the MCCL that's here testifying on this bill, and that's been promoting this, and the other thing tells us a lot about the motivation of the bill. I think this is. This is the pro-life movement trying to move the envelope, based in large part on religious belief. Now, I think it's a broader debate than we've had before. I think we ought to be honest and candid about what's on the table here and not pretend what's going on here, despite testimony that doesn't specify that. And I respect that religious belief, but ennobling it in state statute is a whole different question. And doing it without notice and opportunity to be heard by everyone that might be concerned about this, the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota, I think Mayo Clinic would have a position on this. And I think they ought to be heard. I think a lot of the health organizations, and not just, you know, Juvenile Diabetes Association, American Diabetes Association, that has at least talked to me about their concerns with this kind of the restrictions that we heard at the last hearing, and a whole variety of the health organizations, they should have known that this was coming up and have an opportunity to testify. And if, you know, the committee majority decides, you know, to decide whatever they do, that's the legislative process. But if the process is to do it without notice, that's terrible. And I don't think any of us would want to be a part of that, nor would any of the members of the majority want another majority of a different a value system or approach or on a different issue someday to do the same thing on a different issue. So, I mean, the process is very important. Due process is very important. We don't have it here.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. Again, I'd like to remind everyone that it isn't the Juvenile Diabetes Association or any of those. They're not state programs. We're not involving them. This is state money for state programs. That's what we're talking about.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to just speak a little bit to the process because, you know, I have been here a few years, and there are many, many, many times that we are working on either small bills, big bills, whatever the case is, and we offer amendments. I'm a little taken aback by Senator Latz talking about how we're doing all these horrible things by offering amendments to bills. It is how the process works. And I have been here many, many years, late at night, early in the morning, where amendments are offered. And I don't know if there was notice given to everybody who might have had an interest in it or not. If there was some notice that should have been given, I don't know. But this is how we have handled things many, many times over the years. We're allowed to offer amendments and as we're putting together bills. And I'm sure there are other amendments that will be offered tonight. And, you know, will the question be asked if everybody who may have been interested had been given notice? We had three hearings on the cloning ban, and those were posted, and there was discussion, and there was testimony. And so I guess I the issue was out there, so there was ample opportunity for people to have input, maybe not in this exact language, Senator Latz, but you know, there's opportunity for people to have input on that issue. And like I said, many times there have been amendments offered late at night, early in the morning, any time during the day where there hasn't been notice of every person who may have been interested.
Senator Pappas next, if she still has a comment.
I'll pass.
Okay. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Senator Fischbach, in Health and Human Services budget, when we were reviewing this issue and looking at language, Senator Higgins made a recommendation to amend the language. My question, let me back up and just say my question is in context of what Senator Latz was talking about, which is achieving the goal of the language that would prohibit the use of any processes that would lead to the development of fully human cloned person, as opposed to language that would confuse or create the inability to do therapeutic cloning. Could you explain to me why you would not accept an amendment that would use, like on section, on line 1.8, cloning means any process that would lead to the development of a fully human person, rather than the language you have here? That amendment, which would be supported probably by everybody, because we seem to all agree that we do not want any use of a process that would go towards a fully development of a fully human person, is not debated. But it seems as though, because you don't want to change this language, there's something more that you're trying to accomplish with this. And that's not what you're, that's what we're not hearing you speak explicitly to. Or you would accept the amendment provided by Senator Higgins.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, when we looked at the bill in Health and Human Services, it was a completely different bill. It was the ban on human cloning bill. And we were, it, when it went to judiciary, Senator Higgins offered an oral amendment. And, yes, I opposed it at that time because on the fly putting it together, I just, you know, I didn't want to confuse the issue at that point, and I didn't, you know, what the implication of her language was. We worked on language. In judiciary, there was an amendment put on. What we are doing here is we are talking about human cloning. Whatever they call it, what we're banning is what we're stopping the funds for is human cloning. So I guess, you know, it's, I guess I thought that that was pretty clear. My goal is to stop the use of state funds for human cloning.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pat.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, the word human is too broad a term. You need to use this. What we heard from Dr. Walters is reproductive cloning. That's the correct terminology, and that would exclude therapeutic cloning. Human, you know, human does not necessarily mean a fully grown human being. It means anything to do with a human being. It's just too broad a use. So we could amend it to say that no state funds may be used to either support reproductive cloning or to pay for any expenses incidental to reproductive cloning. That would be more specific to what we all agree that we can support. It's the broadness of the terminology that the university is telling us would include therapeutic cloning.
And
Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair, I think I'm very clear. I am trying to prevent the use of state funds for human cloning. It does reproductive therapeutic. If it's human cloning, that is what I want to prevent the use of state fund for. So I will stick with my language.
I understand, but Senator Fischbach, therapeutic cloning is not trying to reproduce a human being. I think that it's unfortunate they even use the word cloning, but they are in a sense replicating tissue, replicating cells. And to replicate cells, it could be for your own use, as I mentioned before, or it could be for a new liver, or it could be for, you know, to address other diseases. You know, we're not really the disease experts here.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, you have used a phrase several times that you say we all agree. We don't all agree, so I would rather hear you say some of us agree. I don't agree with what you're saying, so we don't all agree.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Pappas.
We all agree that we don't think it's appropriate for science to replicate a human being, fully grown human being.
But then you include
Senator
therapeutic.
Brown.
But therapeutic, thank you, Mr. Chairman, therapeutic is not leading to an actual human being. Therapeutic is therapeutic. You know, it's repairing cells. It's repairing organs. It's healing diseases, a disease that you or I might have someday. And, you know, and thank God that scientists have invented a cure.
Senator Pappas, I'm just saying we don't all agree on what you're saying there, so I would appreciate if you'd say some of us agree. That may be frustrating to you, Senator Pappas, but I'm just expressing my point of view.
Senator Lurie.
Well, I think we all do agree that we should go at least as far as Senator Pappas is saying. I think that's all a point of agreement is the point that she's making. Some of us feel that it needs to go farther, and I think that's what you're saying as well. So, I mean, I think everyone would agree that we don't want to do reproductive cloning. Would you agree, Senator?
No, I'm not agreeing with I'm not agreeing with what you're saying. So that's my point of contention. I'm just saying, don't include all of us that we all agree. We don't all agree.
Do you Senator agree, Lord. Senator Brown, that we should not be doing reproductive cloning?
I do.
Well, good. That was what Senator Pappas
that
said.
That wasn't what I was hearing.
Okay. I think we should. Any other discussion on the A2 amendment? See none. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd like a roll call vote and have it entered in the journal.
Okay. Senator Pappas has requested a roll call. We need three hands for that. Two, three. We got four, five. Comment, Senator Sharon?
Yes. I wonder if I may offer an amendment.
Yes.
This would be an oral amendment. I would make an oral amendment that under lines 1.4 and 1.5, instead of reading as it does, that we say state funds prohibited use for reproductive cloning and therapeutic cloning.
Senator Sharon, can you please repeat that just one more time so all the members have
I would like to replace the title for Section 11, lines 1.4, 1.5, and instead of saying state funds, colon, prohibited use for human cloning, say state funds, colon, prohibited for reproductive cloning and therapeutic cloning.
Any discussion on the amendment, on the oral amendment? Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's necessary. I think human cloning is pretty clear.
Any other discussion? Senator Sharon.
Senator Fischbach, I know from your perspective it is, but we've had clear testimony that indicates that it's understood that there's a distinct difference between reproductive cloning and therapeutic cloning, and that it ought to be made clear that your intent is to prohibit both. And that's what the title will do. Otherwise, you will serve to create confusion in the public.
Do all members understand the
it's misleading.
The oral amendment? Okay. Senator Sharon moves the oral amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Nay.
Amendment fails.
Back to the question.
Okay, now we're back on the A2 amendment, and a roll call has been requested and granted. The clerk will take the roll.
Senator Fischbach.
Yes.
Senator Brown.
Yes.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Gimsey.
Yes.
Senator Latz.
No.
Senator Lori.
No.
Senator Miller.
Yes.
Senator Pappas.
No.
Senator Peterson.
Yes.
Senator Roebling.
Yes.
Senator Saxhog.
No.
Senator Senjum is absent. Yep. Senator Sharon.
No.
Senator Tomasoni.
No.
There being 7 yes votes and 6 no votes, the motion prevails. Okay, we're back to discussion on the Senate File 924, the omnibus, as amended. Senate File 924, as amended. Any discussion? Senator Latz?
Mr. Chairman, what's the motion?
The bill is to move, or the motion is to recommend to pass and move to finance.
Chairman,
Senator Tomasoni. Senator Tomasoni has the A6 amendment. If we can get that passed out, please. Thank you.
Senator Tomasoni, you want to explain the A6 amendment as it's getting passed out?
Mr. Chairman, the A6 amendment is higher education credit for people going to college. It's basically based along what the lines of what the Hope scholarship is based upon, and it gives students the ability to get another $2,000 on top of the Hope to be able to pay for their college education. And this is being offered in conjunction with the idea of how expensive college has become. Our students have been going to school over the last 10 or 15 years and amounting masses of debt that have been unbelievable. And this just makes college a little bit more affordable for them. We are funding colleges in this bill at the 1998 level of funding. And that's an indication of how much more pressure we've been put on our students as well as on our institutions, not only to educate but to be educated. And so, Mr. Chairman, this will give students some relief, and I hope it'll help a little bit in making college a little bit more affordable.
Thank you. Senator Thomas, I have a quick question. Does this have any fiscal impact?
I don't know, Mr. Chairman.
A lot.
Okay. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Thomas, and Senator Miller asked about the fiscal impact, and you don't know what it would be, what the fiscal impact would be. Was it introduced as a bill? Or, I mean, I guess I'm wondering if there's more information available about it.
No, I,
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fischbach, I'm offering this just because I've been very, very frustrated over the years with the cost of education, how it's been going up, how we've been cutting our institutions, how we've been charging our kids, and I think this just helps us make college a little bit more affordable for our kids.
Okay. I'd just like to say I share those frustrations, Senator Tomasoni, but I think we need to know the fiscal impact.
There's no obligation. Before.
Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, I think this would necessitate the bill going to the tax committee, but and then in the tax committee they could figure out what the fiscal impact is. But I support Senator Tomasoni because I think that the debt load has been too high for our students, and if we're now going to have affect the quality of their education, it's going to take them longer to graduate, therefore their debt load is going to be a little higher. I think this is something that we need to do for students. It'd be very helpful for them, since my understanding of this, Senator Tomasoni says it piggybacks on the Hope credit. So the Hope credit is a 20% of the cost of tuition up to $2,000, and if this is similar, then it's another 20% of the cost of tuition. That would be 40% of the cost of tuition up to $4,000, and that would be very helpful at the University of Minnesota, for example, where I think tuition is about $8,000 or $9,000. And certainly at the private colleges, it would also be very helpful. So we've wanted to help students. We've protected the state grant. And I think if the majority has some proposals to cut some taxes for some people, and maybe they'd like to consider helping students out instead.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The HOPE credit is $2,500 a year up to 4 years. And you can imagine the fiscal impact this would have. It doesn't say, however, on 1.7, it says the lifetime learning credit, which is somewhat different and I think is still in existence, but maybe not, because that used to be, you used to get the HOPE credit for 2 years and then you could take the lifetime learning credit after that. But consider that it is $10,000 a student per year. I can only imagine what the fiscal note would be, and it would not be affordable to our state at this time.
Yes, and I have the same feeling. I'll just repeat what I said. I don't disagree with this concept, but without knowing the fiscal impact, it would be tough.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Pappas.
Well, I think it's time for people who support students to step forward, and so I would like to have a roll call vote on the amendment and have the results in the journal.
I'd love it.
Okay. Senator Pappas has requested a roll call. Can I get three hands? Got the hands. Okay. Request granted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roebling.
I think this is really fiscally irresponsible. There is no way that we could put this in place at this time. And in order to do it, of course, we'd have to expect taxpayers to really pay up a lot more money. And I guess that it's just not doable. It's something the federal government is probably not going to be able to do much longer either. And I just think it's a very fiscally irresponsible effort at this time.
Senator Brown.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd have to agree with you, Mr. Chair. I don't think the concept is necessarily bad, but I can't vote for something that vote for it now and find out what it's going to cost later.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I think the budget proposal is fiscally irresponsible. And I do disagree that it's not doable. It is doable. It's just a matter of where you establish priorities and whether or not, in fact, that you ask, for example, when we resolve this budgetary process, if some of the people of the state of Minnesota who have not yet made a single contribution to the deficit reduction would add some resources to the state, or if we continue to ask students and others to pay a disproportionate share of the costs that have incurred to this state because of the deficit and because of the collapse of the banking industry. So I think it's irresponsible for us to put forward a budget that doesn't ask the highest income earners to make a contribution to the deficit reduction and instead put forward budgets like this one that ask the universities that are necessary for us to be able to really compete in the future for job creation and for growing the economy and for growing the wealth of people who in the past have not had any access to wealth, and to grow the middle class, which are the group of people who will be in the stores buying the products that will drive more job creation. So we shouldn't be talking in here about budget proposals that are irresponsible, because this is not irresponsible to do otherwise, to not do things that support students' capacity to get the education they need in order to create jobs, to be able to create new industries, to create entrepreneurial opportunities in new markets. That's what's irresponsible.
Thank you. And I don't want to argue responsible versus irresponsible. But if we did have the fiscal note, maybe we would be able to put more money into the MinSCU or U of M or take off the tuition cap or put a 0% cap or a freeze. So it's tough to make these decisions without knowing the fiscal impact. I had Senator Tomasoni.
Chairman, put the amendment on the bill, set the taxes, and find out what it costs.
That's true.
Can't afford to take it off.
Senator Fischbach.
And Mr. Chair, while I appreciate the idea in the amendment, this is the first time we've seen it. Literally, when we were handed it after it had been offered, and we have not had the opportunity to take a look at it and figure out and deal with the fiscal note. There was no notice on it. And it does concern me that we would be I'm sure there's a serious fiscal note on this, and I'm very concerned. Someone said it was doable. I don't know if it's doable. We don't even know what the fiscal note is, and so I'm going to have to oppose this evening.
Senator Sharon.
I'm the one that said it was doable. I said it was doable if you're willing to prioritize appropriately and ask the highest income earners to participate in the solution. And the second point I would like to make is that just in an earlier amendment, there were clearly fiscal impacts when we were asking organizations not to use both state and federal funds in ways that they had in the past. So to suddenly bring up the issue that we can't talk about things that have significant fiscal impact is disingenuous.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Fischbach.
I just want to point out that we were not asking them to not do certain things with state fund does not reflect on the state budget specifically. This obviously would have to be a line item in the budget, and obviously, you know, a cost, not a savings. So it would be a cost to the state, and that would show up in the budget. What the amendment that I offered and was accepted simply said what could and couldn't be done with state and federal funds. So they are a little bit different.
Any more discussion on the A6 amendment? If not, Senator Tomasoni renews his motion to move the A6 amendment, and we have a roll call requested, and the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Fischbach?
No.
Senator Brown?
No.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Gimsey?
No.
Senator Latz?
Yes.
Senator Lori?
Yes.
Senator Miller?
No.
Senator Pappas?
Yes.
Senator Peterson?
No.
Senator Roebling?
No.
Senator Saxog?
Yes.
Senator Senjum is still gone. Senator Sharon?
Yes.
Senator Tomasoni?
You worried me there.
Yes. Good one, thank you.
There being 6 yes votes and 7 no votes, the motion does not prevail. Senator Sharon.
I have the A3 amendment.
Senator Sharon has the A3 amendment. We'll get that passed out. Senator Sharon, if you'd like to start explaining the A3 amendment.
As it's being handed out, the motivation behind this amendment, which is to, you'll see when you receive the amendment, the lines are indicated and changed to delete the amounts that are allocated to MNSCU and to the University of Minnesota, and to change them to the amounts that were in the governor's budget, which reflected about a 6% reduction in each of their budgets. And that's essentially what the amendment does. And it's based on the testimony that we've been hearing, which I think has been very persuasive, that even though in the environment, as people have anticipated, they would have to integrate some cuts and that they've been planning for that for the long time. It certainly wasn't at the level that is presented in the current bill in front of us. And even with the discussion about asking for no cap on tuition or at the very worst a 5% cap, that is what they were prepared for dealing with the 6% budget cut and not the one that's being proposed in front of us today. The reason that we need to make these kinds of stronger supports and investment, even in tough times, has been articulated this evening eloquently by representatives of the institutions and our student groups. They're concerned about the longer time in school and the delay to become a participant in the world economy, the increased costs of living that occur because courses like English can't be taken in a timely manner, or other courses to move towards graduation and completion, the desire to maintain access and affordability and quality, and to have all of those core components be supported and not one collapsing while others are protected, recognizing that MNSCU is serving 75,000 students, 40,000 more than the year 2001, and when this budget, and actually the governor's budget, this one's even worse, provided funding at 2001, and they're serving 40,000 students more, 35,000 graduates a year out of the MNSCU system we heard today, and the important role that they play in retraining and retooling the workforce. I heard that from our student organization. The University of Minnesota told us that with the budget that's in front of us, they'd reduce course offerings, increase class sizes, eliminate unique, focused learning experiences. They would have to eliminate a number of more faculty positions. And this would be even more severe if the tuition cap is established at the current level that's in the budget. So, since every dollar invested, for example, at the University of Minnesota generates $13.20 in the statewide economy, it's said that more than $512 million in state and local tax revenue alone is generated by the University of Minnesota, that the University of Minnesota affects business volume in a variety of ways, in direct expenditures for their goods and services, for example, and the university provides good jobs and creates jobs across the state. One out of every 43 jobs in the state is attributable to the University of Minnesota. It's the fifth largest employer in the state. So, because of that, I'm introducing to you this amendment, and I'm hoping that you will support it.
Senator Sharon, do you have a solution to fill these increases within the higher ed budget, or are you just presenting it as is?
I'm presenting it as is, although I can say the same is true for this. It'll be referred to finance, and they can certainly participate in creating their priorities in that committee. But also there is the best and longer-term solution, which is more sustainable and predictable funding for these systems, and that is to ask the highest income earners to make a contribution to the deficit instead of asking everybody and everything else to make that contribution. Having these systems create these kinds of crisis rather than asking people to pay just $1 more of their income towards not even $1 more of their income towards solving these crises in the state.
Okay. So just so members are aware, this would put a hole in the budget proposal in front of us from higher ed. Senator Pappas.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that the higher ed target was way too high in reality, and I think we as the committee should just rebel against that and say, no, we don't think this is a good idea to cut our higher ed systems to this extent that we're eating our seed corn, and this is the future of our state. Senator Sharon was quoting from a economic impact study that I just passed out, and if you look on the back, it also talks about the important impact that research has on the state of Minnesota, bringing hundreds of millions of dollars into the state. In fact, generating $1.5 billion in total economic impact. And we don't realize, we don't learn enough about the kind of research that's done at the U. We really need to do that. We need to find out more about that. We need to engage the university, and they need to engage us. And we need to engage our constituents. We undervalue and underappreciate the role of the University of Minnesota in our state's economy. And I think this economic impact study is a very important contribution to educating us about that importance.
Senator Pappas, when the University of Minnesota was here several weeks ago now, they're all kind of running together now, but they offered a tour, and I think that would be a good idea, maybe a committee field trip to see some of that research. Senator Sharon first, and then Senator.
Thank you. I just want to emphasize what I think Senator Pappas suggests to us as a committee. No matter what side of the aisle we're on, we are responsible for communicating something to both of our caucuses about the target that was set for higher education, which makes the term higher education an oxymoron in relationship to the suggestion that we meet the target that is I understand that the chair of this committee had to try to do that, but I think that it's not unreasonable for us as a committee to say that that is an unattainable objective, given the requirements that we have to create jobs, to educate the future of these young people who would like to participate in the economy, would like to have an opportunity to earn a reasonable income, and that everything that we're being asked to do with that target takes us in the wrong direction.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I do understand that under the rules there's no obligation for this committee to pass out a bill that does meet the targets or stay under those. But I will say that, you know, we worked very hard on meeting those, and the governor's numbers, and we're only picking out a couple of the governor's numbers here, are based on completely different numbers and situation that the governor had in his budget. And it would be, I think that I don't, my guess is that the chair, the finance committee doesn't want to see a budget that is that will throw the entire budget out of balance or the budget targets out of balance. And under the budget that we're living within right now, I just don't see where these numbers are possible. And so I do oppose the amendment.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, I'd like to ask for a roll call and have it recorded in the journal.
Okay. Senator Pappas has requested a roll call. I just need to see three hands. I got three hands. Okay. Roll call is granted.
Any more discussion? Senator Latz.
Just one additional note, if I might, Mr. Chair. I was informed earlier today that of the $550 or $60 million that the state invests in the University of Minnesota, about $512 million comes back to the state general fund in the form of taxes paid by employees of the University of Minnesota. So it really, for $50, $60, $70 million net investment, we get an amazing return on our dollar. Any one of us here would relish the opportunity to make an investment out of our own pockets that gave that kind of return. So when we're cutting that investment, we are cutting our return on investment. In fact, multiplying the contraction of that investment rather than benefiting from the multiplier effect of a full investment.
Any other discussion on the A3 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I know that we were trying to be respectful, and we were just looking for Senator Tomasoni stepped out for a phone call and then has since disappeared. And I don't know how he disappeared. He's not that quick anymore. But I don't know if we want to try to take a minute and try to figure out where he is. I don't know if he felt very strongly about voting on this or.
He went to Capital Investment.
Oh, he went to Capital Investment. Maybe we can just take a minute. I want to be respectful of Senator Tomasoni. Well, and I don't think, Mr. Chair, I don't think they were having a series of votes, so. In Capital Investment, but I want to be respectful of Senator Tomasoni.
Sure. Well, let's
see.
He's
more than six votes.
But how many votes can Senator Tomasoni offer?
Well, depends on that, yeah.
Yeah, since roll call has been requested and it's going in the journal, I think it's only fair that we at least give them the option.
Should we get Senator Senjum too?
Yeah. He's chairing, and Mr. Chair, he's Senator chairing the Capital Investment Committee, so I'm on that.
As long as we have a little bit of time here, I guess I'd like to maybe we can further the discussion about what I keep hearing over and over again about taxing the highest earners in our state to pay for things like this. And I guess I would have a question for Senator Sharon. First of all, what does she consider rich or high income, and at what level would be indicating that you would be willing to increase the taxes? And then the second question that I would have is, would she use that increase to specifically fund what is going to be an increase in the budget for higher education? And if under her proposal, would the dollars that would be increased from those higher wage earners go specifically to this, or would they be sent to the general fund and end up competing with nursing homes and schools and everything else that's in the general fund budget in the hopes that a part of it or all enough of it would come back to fix this?
And since we talked about it a little bit, Senator Sharon?
I'm happy to have an opportunity to answer that question. The first part of it is at what level of income? I relish the chance to be able to talk about that because I've never used the term tax the rich. That's something that comes from somebody else to confuse the public. I'm talking about those who are at a tax rate that is that is at a level in which the percent of their income is lower than the majority of the people in the state of Minnesota. I'm talking about those that have an income level where their tax rate creates the percent of income that they pay towards taxes is less than the middle class. That's what I'm talking about. And would I be specifically targeting those resources for higher education? I cannot remember the exact amount of money that would generate. I don't know if anybody else here does, but certainly a portion of that I would absolutely strongly advocate to go to higher ed. But I also would support that those dollars go to support nursing homes and to support the disability community and those that this budget, not only in higher ed, but in the state, in the entire budget that's being put forward in every division, is asking the lowest income people and the middle income people, whether they're the disabled community or the elderly in their nursing homes, whether they're people that work in the State Department in order to serve us, whether it's people that are engaged in teaching in our schools. We're asking all of those people. Not just one round of cuts have we asked them. We're on the third round in which we're asking people to cut back their health insurance, their wages, their benefits, the services they get from the county. We've asked so many reductions in the last 3 years and now our fourth year that I've been here doing this. And we have yet to ask the highest income earners to pay a dollar more to help contribute to the deficit reduction. And that's the shame of this budget.
All right. I think we have all our members back. Are we expecting Senator Senjum? I don't think so. He's chairing the committee.
He's chairing the committee.
Okay. So Senator Sharon renews her motion to move the A3 amendment, and roll call has been requested, and the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Fischbach.
No.
Senator Brown.
No.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Gimsey.
No.
Senator Latz.
Yes.
Senator Laurie.
Yes.
Senator Miller.
No.
Senator Pappas.
Yes.
Senator Peterson.
No.
Senator Roebling.
No.
Senator Soxhog.
Yes.
Senator Senjum is gone. Senator Sharon.
Yes.
Senator Tomasoni.
Yes.
There being 6 yes votes and 7 no votes, the motion does not prevail. Further discussion on Senate file 924 as amended? Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, as long as I'm on a roll here, I'll request a roll call and have it recorded in the journal.
On the final.
On the final vote.
Final vote. Okay, we got the hands. So, Senator. Senator Fischbach would move to Senate file 924 as amended to pass on to the finance, pass and be referred to the Senate Finance Committee. A roll call has been requested and granted, so the clerk will take the roll.
Senator Fischbach.
Yes.
Senator Brown.
Yes.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Gimsey.
Yes.
Senator Latz.
No.
Senator Laurie.
No.
Senator Miller.
Yes.
Senator Pappas.
No.
Senator Peterson.
Yes.
Senator Roebling.
Yes.
Senator Saxhog.
No.
Senator Senjum. Senator Sharon.
No.
Senator Tomasoni.
No.
There being 7 yes votes and 6 no votes, the motion does prevail. No further business. The committee is adjourned.
Too late.
You think it's going to be easy?